Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Stick and Hack Show, a sophisticated and brilliant look into the world of golf from a stick and a hack. Now, your hosts, Mike Ryan and Adam Grubb.
All right, everybody, welcome in. This is the Stick and Hack Show. I'm your host, Adam Grubb. The hack, that's Mike Ryan. The stick, Mike, I haven't said welcome in months. Good to see you, sir.
I know, man. I don't even know how to react to this. I feel like I'm going to be rusty and like not know how to ask questions properly, or I'll stutter around here like a moron.
Well, that will be the least of our worries if this thing goes through, because we have a huge guest today. We are back from the summer hiatus. This is episode 1, season 4, the debut episode here of season 4 of the Stick and Hack Show. It's good to be back with you. And we thought we would just kick things off at the highest possible level we could. Mark O'Meara is on the program today. Mike, let's talk about Mark O'Meara on the Stick and Hack Show. We are super excited to have him on here. PGA golfer, two-time major winner, and Masters winner, Open champion. It's going to be a great conversation. He's got stories of a storied career that we're going to get to, but I think we're going to get into some things that he probably hasn't talked about in the past. Why wouldn't we? We're the Stick and Hack Show. He's not going to get normal questions here, right, Mike?
Well, no, we're not the run of the mill podcast here. We try to challenge our guests.
Yes, we absolutely do. Let's start with our first story, which is the haul. Now, that is the pinnacle of every golfer's dream, but it really wasn't the pinnacle, and it wasn't anything anybody thought about for many years because there was no hall. There was no Hall of Fame for golf. In sports, we normally measure success in terms of championships, trophies, rings, jackets, belts, etc. But in almost every sport, there exists a level of excellence that goes beyond sheer achievement and leads more towards immortality. 1974, the Diamond Head Corporation, who had just bought the famed Pinehurst Resort a few years earlier for a little over $9 million, let that sink in for a second, established the World Golf Hall of Fame. Their inaugural class included legends like Hogan, Hagen, Sarrazin, as well as more recent greats like the Big Three, Nicholas Palmer, and former Stick and Hack guest, Mr. Gary Player. Throughout the 80s, the PGA of America slowly took over management and then ownership of the hall, and then in 1994, the World Golf Foundation was formed to help promote the sport and take over management of the Hall of Fame. Part of this meant a new hall in a new location. After nearly 25 years, the World Golf Hall of Fame moved in 1998 from Pinehurst, North Carolina, to its current home in St. Augustine, Florida. And if you've never been there, do yourself a favor. It is an incredible, incredible space. The next big change came in 2014 when a new selection process was announced for induction to the hall. First off, inductions would now only occur every other year. Those chosen in fall of 2014 would be inducted in 15, with the next induction coming in 2017. They tweaked the age and win requirements for consideration to the hall, but the overhaul also replaced a much larger pool of voters with a nominating committee and a selection committee, and also created four fields under which someone could be nominated: male player, female player, veteran, and lifetime achievement. Each nominating class would include 5 male and 5 female competitors nominated under those categories, and 3 additional nominees for both the lifetime achievement and veterans categories. For someone to get in, they needed 75% of the vote from the newly formed committee. The first co-chairs for the selection committee were Nancy Lopez, Annika Sorenstam, Arnold Palmer, and Gary Player. Wow.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mr. Palmer saying about the change, "This is a great step for the Hall of Fame. I was honored to be part of the first Hall of Fame class 40 years ago, 1974. It will be a privilege to serve on the selection committee with Nancy, Annika, and Gary for the class of 2015. So why are we talking about the World Golf Hall of Fame, Mike, and these changes? Because a member of that class, selected by a curated group of golf legends and contributors, the first class under the new Hall of Fame, is today's guest. He won the 1979 California State Amateur, Southwest Amateur, Mexican Amateur, and the U.S. Amateur, where he soundly defeated the defending champion John Cook 8-7. Sounds like a battle with me. 8-7 in the finals, navigating a field that included Fred Couples, Scott Hoke, Payne Stewart, Bob Tway, Bobby Clampett, and Be the Right Club Today, Hal Sutton. 1998, at the age of 41, he won the Masters and the Open Championship, along with the PGA and PGA Tour Player of the Year awards. He's played on and was victorious on multiple Ryder Cup and President's Cup teams. And in 2015, Mark O'Meara was part of the first new class in the World Golf Hall of Fame, where he now sits on the nominating committee. My God, is it good to see you, Mark O'Meara, on the Stick and Hack and Show. Mark, how are you, sir?
Great, Adam. Thanks. Thanks, you guys, for having me on. I appreciate it.
It is our pleasure. Mike, I would say how does this look? How does this sound? But I think we know the answer. You're pumped. Yes.
I'm speechless as usual. So, you know, I just let you run things, Adam, and then I'm just kind of here. I'm along for the ride.
That's not new information. We're all aware of that. Mike, we did. We'll let everyone in on a little secret. We did get a little chance to see his trophy case just a second ago. Yes. We'll put that on as a separate piece to the YouTube channel for Stick and Hack and StickandHack.com, because it is a remarkable piece of trophy and hardware, an incredible bookcase right there in his home. You know, Mark, in the past when we've read our guest bios and their accomplishments, they have a sly grin on their face because they have forgotten most of the things that they've accomplished in their career. Is that the case with you? Is it cool to hear it again as I went through that list?
You know, I think it is, Adam. I certainly realize that, you know, now at 64 years of age, playing professional golf for 41 years, you know, sometimes we don't take accountability of kind of what's transpired in our life. And it's flattering, it's humbling, you know, to hear you speak of some of the things that have happened in my life. And I feel so fortunate. And sometimes, you know, you just should take a step back and realize that, you know, take accountability of what's happened in your life.
Mark, back in 1998, was somebody's age on tour, and specifically when they won, as big of a deal as it is today?
Well, I think that certainly, you know, the younger generation have come along and are so much more mature, Mike, at an earlier age, and they're ready to win. Back in the days, you know, a lot of times players, you know, they felt like they didn't reach their peak or their prime until, you know, the early 30s to mid 30s. And nowadays, you know, we're watching these young players, you know, at 21, 20, 22, coming out and winning and winning kind of easily and expecting themselves to win. So it has changed.
Yeah, because you would think that at 41, back in the day, that was okay. He's 41 years old. Who cares? Today, you're 41, 42, 45, winning a major. It's news for a week and a half, and they're calling the home to make sure that you don't need to be back in time, right? I mean, that.
Yes.
It's a very different landscape in today's golf space.
You know, it is. That's why the accomplishment that Phil Mickelson did this year, you know, winning the PGA Championship at, you know, close to 51 years of age was incredible. But once again, you know, you take a look and the game has certainly changed. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the golf ball doesn't know how old you are.
Yeah. Indeed, and neither does the golf course, and they will punish you from time to time. You know, the beginning of your golf story, Mark, is not uncommon. You were 13 years old. You snuck onto a golf course. You started smashing the ball around a little bit, and you fell in love with the game. And you've been in love with the game ever since. But looking back, can you imagine yourself doing anything else? Because I know for a time period there, you were actually thinking about doing something else.
Well, after I won the amateur in 79, I was my senior year in college, and I knew that I needed to go back to school and finish up and get my degree, because at the time, even though I'd won the amateur and I'd played well in college and was an All-American, this and that, you know, there was no guarantee, especially the way I performed in the Masters in 80 as an amateur and the U.S. Open champion as an amateur. I to be honest with you, I sucked. I wasn't very good compared to the rest of the pros. So I think on the back burner, I knew that if it didn't go well, I had to have that degree. And I also knew that, you know, we're a lot like our parents. And my father was in the furniture industry. He was a furniture guy his whole life, sales. And I thought, you know, I don't think my father ever thought I was going to make it, number one. And number two, I thought if I couldn't make it as a pro, or maybe I shouldn't even try as a pro, I would fall into the category kind of along my father's footsteps and be in some type of sales job and use my golf as a plus.
That's where we all do in sales. We play golf and we just use it as a plus so we can get out there and sell something, right? Right.
Exactly.
You're either going to be a pro golfer or you're going to be in sales. That those are the only two routes that were going to be down your path. Do you remember the first time you snuck onto the golf course and started caddying for people and that those early days? Because I know Mike and I've talked about this so many times. Mike grew up on a course. You know, I didn't. I kind of found golf later on and just by happenstance. But Mike, he grew up on a golf course. You, it sounds like you grew up on a golf course. Do you remember those early days, the first time that you smelled the grass and that first contact of the ball?
I do. I remember how special it was. And I also realized that a lot of it happened for a reason. I mean, I was born in North Carolina, but by the time I was 13, My dad was getting transferred, new jobs. I'd lived in North Carolina, Marietta, Ohio, Birmingham, Michigan, Long Island, New York, Dallas, Texas, Tustin, California, Wheaton, Illinois, back to Mission Viejo, California. So when you get moved around so much as a young individual, I mean, it's hard to make friends. As soon as you made a friend, you know, you're gone. So I would have been 13, you know, maybe end of seventh grade, going into eighth grade, junior high. And when we moved into Mission Viejo, back to Southern California for the second time, you know, the golf course was right down there. And I didn't really play golf before that. We lived on a golf course. My dad played. But, you know, I don't know what happened. To be honest with you, Adam and Mike, I just took my mom's clubs, which I didn't have any clubs. I took my mom's clubs and I kind of hiked down the hill and started whacking balls and fell in love with it and just tried not to get in the way, because that would have been in like 69. You know, a lot of kids weren't really hanging out at the golf course, but luckily I became friends with my neighbor who played golf, and he was about my age, a year older. And next thing you know, we got the bond and had a good high school team, and the rest is kind of history.
Mark, we like to get the behind the scenes takes on many things in golf. So let's talk about the World Golf Hall of Fame for a second. Can you walk us through your process for evaluating players or people that do fit the criteria and making selections on who to nominate?
Well, I think when as Adam pointed out, Mike, you know, the fact that they kind of overhauled the whole Hall of Fame selection committee and the ideas of how an individual is going to get into the World Golf Hall of Fame after the 2013 Hall of Fame class, you know, 14 went through that whole renovation. And now I think it's wise, because the members that are in the Hall of Fame have a vote. My process would be, you know, they send us a bunch of information on possible candidates, you know, and when you look at it, at least the male side, I mean, the female side was always difficult. You know, I had to have like 20 wins, multiple major championships. I mean, it was tough. And so now I think we put the majors in high regard. You know, having a major championship win is very, very important. 1, 2, 3, something like that. On the male side, we look at, you know, the players' championship, kind of a minimum of almost 15 wins. Or on the international side, you know, it is a hard thing, and it's not easy to really narrow it down to specific players. But I think over the time, there's so many players that I believe in my heart that should be in the Hall of Fame right now, and they're not in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, they do kind of move the criteria around a little bit, which I'm not always, you know, totally 100%, because it used to be, you know, you had to be 50 or older. Now it's down to 45. And I understand, you know, and some of the other players that got in early that still play well and still are winning. So, you know, the Hall of Fame is a special place. I don't know how many members we have, that maybe there's 64 members in the Hall of Fame, something like that. And you know, look, obviously it was a thrill when I got the call from the commissioner back in 14 saying that, you know, he made the first call to me to let me know that I was going to get in. And, you know, I was disappointed, to be honest with you, because in 13, I thought I had the credentials to get in, and I didn't get in. But, you know, sometimes it's better to wait a little bit longer, as Adam pointed out, not to belabor it, but to have the confidence of Arnold Palmer and Gary Player and Annika Sorensen and Nancy Lopez, to have those four finally give the vote for myself, David Graham, Laura Davies, and A.W. Tillinghast to go into the Hall in 2015. That was a privilege, and it was worth waiting for.
So when you think about baseball, the Baseball Hall of Fame is really the creme de la creme of a hall, right? And then right behind that is probably the Canton and the College Football Hall of Fame. Do you think that at some point that Golf Hall of Fame is going to have that same first ballot recognition that these other sports do? Because the names that you just said right there in the last 3 minutes is enough for me to go, my God, why isn't this a bigger topic every year of who's in, who's out, and all that, like it is with baseball?
Well, I think it is. And like you said, Adam, it's a tough call, because there's some players that certainly deserve to be in there that aren't in there yet. And, you know, we don't want time to pass by. And it's nice to be able to have an induction ceremony with a player that, you know, is still present, is still on this earth.
That's a good start.
You know, it doesn't do a whole lot of good if they're not around to for them to be able to accept that great honor. So, you know, I think we're moving in the right direction, and I think golf is definitely growing. I mean, the impact that Tiger Woods had on the game has been tremendous. And so, you know, more and more, I think, over the years, and the fact that it's once every 2 years instead of every year is going to make it more special.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, you were a member of two of the most memorable Ryder Cup teams in history with the War on the Shore in 91 and the Miracle at Brookline in 99. I'm sure every minute of those days are etched in your memory. And if not, they replay it every Ryder Cup year, those years. Could take us back there if you could, and what that experience was like and what you remember about it, and some of those stories that our listeners would go, holy cow, I can't, this is a firsthand account of both of those classics.
Well, I can honestly say in the five Ryder Cup teams I played on, luckily, two winning teams, I played on two losing teams, and I played on one tying team. So I got to see, you know, everything. Sorry about that, you guys. But I got to see it all with the Ryder Cup. And like you said, in 91 at Kiowa and then 99 at Brookline, you know, there were two, well, certainly 91, the Kiowa won the War of the Shore. The media got behind it pretty big time. And I know that one of the experiences I had, Paul Azinger and I played Nick Faldo, and I think it was either David Guilford. I think that's who it was. And, you know, Zinger and Payne Stewart were so passionate about the Ryder Cup. And, you know, like Seve Ballesteros and Nick Faldo and some of the Europeans were so passionate on their side. And me, I'm just trying not to get in the way. And I think we waxed, you know, Faldo and Ilford or whoever. I can't remember if it was he or Broderick. But anyways, we beat them like 6-5 or something like that in the alternate shot. And I just remember that Zinger was just so fired up and so jacked. And, you know, then we watched what happened. It came down to the last putt in the last group on the last hole to decide that Ryder Cup in 91 at Kiowa. And it was obviously Bernard Langer and Hale Irwin. And Langer stood over a 6-foot putt that if he makes it, they win the Ryder Cup. If he misses it, the United States wins the Ryder Cup. And we're all sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself when he's over it, because I'm friends with Bernard Langer, and I respect him tremendously. I just don't know that anybody should have to have that pressure put on themselves. And there he was. And unfortunately, he missed it, and it was fortunate for our side because we won. And I was happy, but I was also like, wow. I mean, that's a brutal way to end it. But we all witnessed it and saw it.
As a competitor, you were able to put yourself in his shoes instantly. That's crazy. That you were able to see that, you know, there's pressure putts all over the place, but there's nothing now. Granted, Mark, I've never played in a Ryder Cup. You might find that surprising.
Trust me, Adam, you'd be very nervous. I
doubt it.
Off the first tee.
I doubt it.
It would not go well. I can just tell you right now, it would not go well.
You've seen it. Huh? Yeah, so I'm not going to with my partner.
That's smart. Another smart choice from on your side. But thinking about the Ryder Cup and just that pressure is magnified by any Masters, by any other major, and there's no money. There's no placement. There's just this country pride still baffles me to this day how that feels. And you being part of five of them, anybody who came to you for advice has in the years say, hey, how did you deal with the pressure? How do you deal with the Ryder Cup stuff? What do you tell them?
Well, I think I tell them, listen, you know, the thing is golf's really not a team sport. And that's why it takes a player out of his element. You know, all of a sudden you're thrusted into this team atmosphere where, you know, it's not just about you. You know, if you play poorly, you feel like you let your teammates down, their spouses or girlfriends down, your captain down, your country down. So that's what, you know, brings the pressure to the ultimate level. And I just I would tell a young player, look, you know, you win, lose, or draw, you know, your career is not always going to be defined. It could be defined by what happens at a Ryder Cup. But, you know, I look at what I'm proud of is that I qualified for five teams, number one. And that's a great honor in itself, just to qualify for one of the teams. And then to go and just realize, you know what, golf is a very fickle, funny game. And sometimes, you know, it's not always about winning and losing, but it's kind of about how you conduct yourself out there in the course. And if you give it your best and give it all you got, sometimes you're going to lose. And that's just part of the game. In fact, we lose a lot. And so, you know, just take the experience and go with it. and give it your best effort. That's all you can do out there on the course, especially
two-time
in the
major winner Mark Amira is the guest here on the Stick and Hack Show.
Mark, in your off time from the Champions Tour, you are, at least from what our research tells us, an avid fly fisherman. Which is more relaxing for you today, golf or fishing?
Fishing, for sure. I mean, it's a no-brainer. It's either, you know, I'm a big outdoor guy, Mike. You know, I'm a huge snowmobiler in the wintertime. That's why, you know, we have our place up here in Park City. At a golf course, actually, I designed up here at Touhey, and I practice a little bit. I've been off for a week, but I'll hit a few balls because I'm going to play this coming week. So, yeah, my wife sometimes says, you know what? Oh, why don't you, like, if you're bored, why don't you go out and practice? And I said, well, I don't want to. And she goes, okay, that's a good enough reason. I said, it only takes me a couple days.
I do this for a living, okay? I want nothing to do with that.
Right.
So fly fishing, tell us about that and where where that takes you. And, cause I, we hear a lot of this, Mike, right? That a lot of golfers, a lot of celebrities, I know Letterman, one of my idols is this massive outdoors Montana fly fisher. That's where he went away from all the stresses and headaches of a career. That seems to be where you live. Tell me about where you go when you're out there fishing and just enjoying the nature.
Well, I've always loved fishing, to be fair, guys. I mean, I've always loved it. When I was a little kid, when it wasn't like my parents took me fishing or whatever, I remember when I lived in the Midwest, I would take a rod and go down to the lake and try to catch bluegills. And so then that progressed to where, when I lived in Southern California and I first turned pro, even before that, I was a big bass fisherman. And you know, I hope that someday if I made enough money, I could go buy a bass boat so I could go fishing. And it certainly takes your mind away from what I do for a living. And that's playing golf, or the pressures of playing golf and always questioning or understanding or not understanding. Why am I hitting these shots, or why am I not chipping better or putting better or driving the ball better? So when I'm in the river fly fishing now, I've kind of got into fly fishing around 96, 97. I'm a big avid steelhead fisherman where I throw a spey rod, which is a bigger fly rod. And to be fair, I'm probably better at that than I am golf, just because I love it. And I don't always catch a ton of fish, but I know that every cast and every swing of the fly, you know, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be the one. You know, this is going to be it. I'm going to catch a fish here. And especially like fly fishing for trout. You got to be kind of accurate with your cast. So it's like, I guess I would make it kind of like golf where, you know, the creativity of a short game, like a chip shot here or there, trying to place the ball in a certain spot on the green. So sometimes, you know, fly fishing and casting, it correlates exactly right back to golf, but yet I'm not thinking about golf at all. So I think sometimes you got to have an out, and that's what, you know, being an outdoors fly fishing, I think it helps make you better at whatever else you do professionally in your life.
So, Mike, you can appreciate this because Mark has chosen two sports, fishing and golf, both which are solitary, kind of in your own bubble sports, both of which I'm terrible at, fishing and golf, because I need a lot of people around me. I need a lot of activity. I need a lot of action. Is that on purpose, Mark, that you just picked the two things that are pretty isolated to yourself?
Well, I'm not big on crowds. You know, like I'm not big. Cities, I don't mind. I mean, obviously my times of playing golf and being around and being a pal of Tiger Woods, you know, all our practice rounds at all the majors and everything. Listen, nobody's coming out to watch Mark O'Meara play. Hardly anybody. And I get that. And I'm okay with that. But everybody's certainly out there to watch Tiger Woods. And I happen to be, you know, right on a ringside view and watching, you know, what that young man did over his whole career. So, you know, I can understand why, you know, individuals want to once in a while just kind of revert back to something that's away from all that, away from all the drama, away from everybody, you know, judging this or that. And especially today's world, you know, these young players, as talented as they are with social media and the requirements and this and that that they're trying to do. You know, back in our day, you guys are still young, but I'm an old guy. And, you know, we didn't have that. I don't do a lot of social media. I don't care if people know or don't know what I'm doing. But yet I love sharing those opportunities.
Let's talk about
the
Champions Tour here real quick. Mike and I had the opportunity to go to an event at Firestone this past over the summer during our Mike and Adam summer hiatus, where I worked on my golf game and Mike just continued to be a plus one handicap. So good for him. But we went there and we had such a great experience because the guys were so hospitable. They were so pleasant. They looked like they were having fun, but yet they were grinding. I mean, it was a pretty big tournament. It was a PGA championship there at Firestone. Every person that we've talked to that's on that tour have just said how the brotherhood there and the camaraderie and the fraternity that is the Champions Tour is the reason that people were so excited to get to that tour and get done with the grind of the PGA and get them to the Champions Tour just so they can enjoy golf and their buddies. Do you feel the same way as you continue on here at the Champions Tour?
I do, because there's no other sport, to be honest with you guys, that's similar to ours. You know, what professional sport do you see somebody playing for 41 years and still, you know, competitive? I mean, like you said, you guys were there at the senior players at Firestone, and you know, you look at the field there and you got a lot of Hall of Famers. You got guys that have performed, you know, for a long period of time. And you look at a player like Bernhard Langer, who's basically my age, who just turned 64. And he's won 40 times.
Right.
Uh-oh. Sorry, guys.
All good.
Sorry. This is what happens when we do a little podcast at home. The dog riled up. But, you know, look at Bernhard Langer, 41 wins on the Champions Tour. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, so. Yeah, the guys are still very, very good. They're still competitive, but we also come from the era that, you know, we didn't play for much money back then, you know, in the early days on the PGA Tour. So it's come a long way for sure.
Who are some of your favorite people in your career that have not just made you a better player, but they perhaps have made you a better person?
Well, I just heard my doorbell ring. Sorry. So
the Grand Central Station there. Mark, I thought you were living in the middle of the mountains there. It seems to be downtown.
No, well, there is nobody really up here, but unfortunately, these guys, you know, sometimes these things happen. But, you know, the people that really had an impact on me were obviously my mother and my father, but certainly Arnold Palmer, you know, the great Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, who I grew up idolizing. No, no one's greater than that. I mean, those guys have done such a super job in setting the stage for somebody like me to come along. And then, you know, hopefully this new generation, you know, sees that. And I think they do. You know, they understand the responsibility going forward that they have to carry the torch now.
A game called In or Out. And we do this at the end of every show. This is our threesome right here. Mark O'Meara, Mike Ryan, and Adam Grubb. Three people you never probably thought you'd ever hear in the same sentence. Now we're going to bring in a fourth person to our foursome here. And we have to vote if they're in or out. Okay.
Okay.
And you're going to go first, and then Mike, and then me. All right. And the topic and the category of In or Out this time is famous marks. Huh? Famous
like
marks. Yeah,
like
that's your first name.
Very original, Adam.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Famous marks. All right, here we go. So it's just a simple in or out. Mark Wahlberg.
In.
He's in for me. He's a huge golfer, too.
Yeah, he's out for me because he'd want to do it like 5 a.m. or something ridiculous. Because doesn't he get up like 3 in the morning? I got to drink three protein shakes before I go play golf? No, pass. Mark Twain.
In.
In.
In. Mark Ruffalo.
Out.
I think he's in.
He's out. He's out for me. Okay. He's a little. Mark doesn't even know who he is. That's why he's out. Yeah, he's Incredible Hulk. He was in Spotlight. He's an actor.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's how much I follow all this. But the Incredible Hulk's impressive, but still, he'd hit it by me, so he's out.
Mark Cuban.
Out.
Out.
Yeah. Out. I think that's a 3 for 3 there. Out. And now he would pay for it and we'd probably get to be at a really nice course. So I don't know.
That probably is true.
Something to think about.
But we might be able to make some money off him. So
yeah,
we might have to.
True. He might have some good insight.
If it's best ball, we will.
Yeah, for sure.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Nah, out.
He's out.
Out. That's, I don't even know why he's on here. Mark Harmon.
In.
Do you know him?
I know who he is.
Okay.
I'm in.
He's in for me. Yeah, I like Mark Harmon.
Out.
Yeah.
I have no interest in NCIS or Mark Harmon.
You might find your game with him, Adam.
Maybe I could. Maybe I'm not giving these guys enough credit. Mark Maron.
I'm going to say out.
Out for you say out, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say in just to be a contrarian, yeah. But also I think it'd be fun. He'd probably play five holes and quit.
Yeah, I was going to say he's probably he doesn't seem like he'd be much interested in golf.
No, he seems rather gruff and just kind of pissy. So I think that'd be fun for a few holes, and then we'd send him on his way. Mark Messier.
Yes, in for sure.
In. Mark McGrath. Ugh. He's the lead singer of Sugar Ray.
I'm out.
Yeah.
He's out.
Yeah, he's out. He's out for so many reasons. And the reason I have Mark McGrath on here is because his song was very popular. His record was very popular when you were winning the Masters and the Open. That was his couple years. Plus, he tried to hit on my – well, he didn't try. He hit on my girlfriend at a concert. Different story, no good. Different show.
He's out.
Thank you. He's out. Last one here, Mark Hamill. In or out? Famous Marks. Mark Hamill.
Yeah, it's in.
In.
Out. Here's why.
You always have different
Well, here's why. Always. Because he'd want to talk about Star Wars the entire time, I can assume, and I've never seen it.
Well, that's because you're too young.
I'm dumb. Did you say I'm dumb or young?
Young. You're too young. You're not dumb. I would never say you're dumb.
Well,
you guys are too smart. Look at the show, how good it is.
Thank you.
So, obviously, very, very smart.
I've never seen Shawshank Redemption. I've never
seen Shawshank Redemption.
Great movie, that is.
Yeah.
I've never seen
a single solitary second of Star Wars. So the last thing I want to do is spend 4.5 hours with somebody who's in it. That I can tell you as a fact. All right, there we go, everybody. Stick and Hack Show, quite possibly the greatest golf show in the world, from the greatest golf club in the world without the course. That's Mark O'Meara. My thanks to you, sir. An incredible program. Mike Ryan, it's good to be back. It's good to see you again here. Season Absolutely. 4 kicks off with a bang. I don't know where we go from here. We're going to need some help from Mark getting us guests because from the World Golf Hall of Fame, because we're starting off on a bang here. So, Mark, thank you. Good luck the rest of the year, and we'll hopefully we'll come out there to Utah soon and play some golf.
You can come out and play golf and wet a line. Both you guys are always welcome.
I appreciate it. Thanks,
Thank
buddy.
You so much.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks,
Good.
Mike.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're done. This has been the Stick and Hack Show. Go to stickandhack.com to become a free member of the world's greatest golf club without the course.